This is Upstate's HealthLink on air, Linda Cohen along with you. Well, according to the National Kidney Foundation, more than one-third of the over 90,000 people in the United States on a waiting list for a kidney transplant are African Americans. And a recent study indicated that of the 275 transplant centers in the United States, African Americans had at least a 35% lower chance of receiving a live kidney donation, with many factors contributing to this situation, including high rates of high blood pressure, obesity, and diabetes in the African American community, which would preclude them from becoming donors. Here with an inspiring personal perspective on all this is Timothy Hudson, who recently received a donor kidney from his son. And the surgeon who participated in this transplant, Dr. Vaughn Whitaker, assistant professor of surgery specializing in hepatobiliary and pancreatic surgery and transplant services at Upstate Medical University. Welcome to you both. Thanks for coming in, both of you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Hudson, you have recently undergone this kidney transplant. Tell us about it.
Well, it was June 3rd at a transplant. My son donated a kidney to me. At first, I was very resistant to it because I felt like he felt obligated to do so. But I was basically blindsided by the rest of my children who all ganged up on me and said, "Dad, please do this, and you're hurting his feelings." And he talked to me about some of his visits when he came in to at least check to see if he would be a match. And once he knew about certain levels, creatinine and different things of that sort, I realized that he basically did his homework. And then I pray after a lot of praying, I decided to go ahead with the surgery. I was not doing so well at the time, so it was a blessing, and I'm very grateful for it right now. I feel like a new man, feel reborn.
So when did you discover you first had kidney disease?
A little over 4 or 5 years ago. I don't know if you remember the thing they had going around. It was called the bird flu or swine, something from China, and it was going around, and they were telling people to watch out, and there was a certain cough. Well, I got that cough, and I was sure that I had it. I'm thinking, oh, no, not me. It started out as a small cough, no pain, and I remember talking to my mom and said, I'll eventually go to the doctors about this because I had this cough for the last week or so, and it's getting worse. And one night, I started coughing till I lost all breath. And I called for my sister to take me to the emergency room. And by the time she got to me, I could barely breathe.
Oh, my goodness.
I still did not know it was the kidneys because I did not associate it. I had no pain in that area, nothing, until I came in and the doctors checked me over and they said that I was in the, I don't know how he put it, but he said I was having congestive heart failure and kidney failure.
So you were in dire straits. You were in bad shape.
Yes, I was. I remember saying, okay, what do I take for this, and when can I go home?
And what did he say?
He said, you're not, and they took me straight up to intensive care. I was in intensive care for several days.
Wow. Yes. So then what types of treatments did you have to undergo before you finally were able to find a donor and get the transplant?
Well, at the time, considering I was healthy, by standards of most people on dialysis, I was fairly healthy. My creatinine hadn't gone to quite, was on the borderline of going on dialysis.
So you were put on dialysis?
I was eventually, but not at first. They thought I'd be on dialysis in about maybe a few months, and I went maybe about a year or so without dialysis.
So how long from the time you were diagnosed with a kidney disease like this or kidney failure did you have to wait? Because you obviously, were they at that time talking to you about a kidney transplant?
They talked to me about it at that time. My daughter jumped in and she was ready to donate immediately. We had the same blood type. And she's a school teacher in South Carolina. And she stayed around for as long as she could. There were a lot of things that had to be done. And eventually, I did not want her to put off her career because she went to school for that. And some jobs are not so easy to get, or career choices. So she left to go back to South Carolina, and I figured I would wait it out, and either she'd take a summer off or I'd hopefully find a donor.
Dr. Whitaker, I mean, you've been doing this for a while, and as I said in the introduction, there's a wait, a very long wait today in general for kidney transplants, for live donor transplants, but it seems like the problem is worse in the African-American community. Can you speak to that?
Well, you know, there are a number of factors, as you pointed out earlier, that contributes to this long wait for both deceased and living donor transplants. Some of them are related to the fact that African-American people as a group is so, there's so many variety of us that, you know, there is, the heritage is very wide. And so it's not very easy sometimes to find a good match. We're not necessarily a homogeneous population. So that may lead into that. And the other thing is that as African-Americans, we are predisposed to certain medical problems. Hypertension, for example, is present in a high degree and is, in fact, the number one cause of renal failure among African-Americans. And because of this, if someone has hypertension, they cannot, and is African-American, they cannot be a donor. And in some other programs, if you're, for example, Caucasian and you're hypertensive on only one medical, on only one medicine, you may be a donor. That is not the same for African Americans.
Why is that?
Because of the high rates of progression to kidney disease in African Americans. The rates of obesity and diabetes. So medical problems that are sometimes there.
So it lessens the field, so to speak. The field is already somewhat diminished for live donors out there because of the matches, as you said. But in addition, these secondary medical problems also then cuts the field down in terms of
Absolutely.
Your choices.
Yeah.
But in this case, Mr. Hudson, you had a brave number of children step forward. And in the case of your son, it was a particular story that I know about that made this particularly poignant. Tell us about that. He had some trouble himself when he was very small.
When my son, the donor, my youngest son, my baby boy, he was about 6 or 7 months old. We lived in an area called Cicero, in Cicero, New York. I'm sure you know where that is. We were going for out to get together with one of my neighbors, and they just recently had their lawn sprayed. Unaware of it, we put out blankets. It was a beautiful night, a beautiful day. And after the the gathering, I noticed my son was starting to become ill.
How old was your son at the time?
He maybe was 6, 7 months old. And he was a big, strong, really strong, big, healthy kid. And my ex-wife at the time had to leave town. Her grandmother passed away. And she took my daughter at the time, who was probably about 6 or 7, and I kept the two boys. My one was 3 and he was 7 months, so I decided to keep them with me. Right after she left, he got so sick that it was that his eyes were rolling back in his head, he wouldn't eat, and he started shriveling up just almost to nothing. And there was a medical center out in Cicero that I took him to because of the insurances that we had. My ex-wife worked at General Motors. I was able to take him in. They weren't able to pin it down to what was going on with him, but his white blood cell count was everything was out of whack, and we were losing him. And I remember staying up for days, no sleep. I didn't go into work. I just stayed up with them trying to get him popsicles, candy, anything. And I could call their number anytime, and they would actually open up. I remember wrapping him in a blanket and taking him to that medical center, and they would come in. I would come in. They would stabilize him, but it was getting worse. And I remember the doctor telling me that we may basically lose him, and they don't know what to do. And they said that there is one drug that they have that's not really been, I don't know what you call, qualified yet. But if I would sign the papers, and before he could say sign the papers, I had my pen out and I prayed on it because we tried everything. I signed those papers. I don't know what it was, but they injected him and he bounced back. Wow. Thank God, because he was so shriveled up. And I remember the first time he asked for a popsicle, I cried like a baby because he would not eat. And I was just so happy, and I gave him whatever. He had melted popsicles all over the place. Now, he doesn't remember most of this.
Well, 6 months old.
Right, but I remember it. And then that same son that I had to take in to make sure that he stayed alive saved my life. And how poetic that must be. I can't believe I get goosebumps when I think about it.
And I get goosebumps hearing the story.
Yes.
That is quite amazing.
Yes.
That is quite amazing.
Yes.
So during the time that you were thinking about all of this, when your son came forward and said he wanted to be a donor, what did you think?
Absolutely not. No, that's my baby. The other ones, he's just, at the time he came to me, I believe he was 20. And no, you know, he's the one that I don't think you know what you're talking about. I'm your dad. Do you know what this entails? And no. You were going to take it from my sister. Well, she's older. She's educated. And I wasn't sure about hers. I don't want to force anything. You don't owe me anything. And he kept coming to me saying, Dad, I'm here for you. Let me do this. I'm telling you, I know, and I'll prove it. And he studied, and he came back with facts. And well, like I said earlier, I believe, once I realized he knew and did his homework, and I was really becoming ill, I don't think I would have made it much longer.
So it was really becoming dire at that time.
I was pretty bad shape.
Dr. Whitaker, there are newer today methods to try to help with this shortage. And in this case, we had a very brave family member come forward. But you and I have talked before about what's being done now to try to help in those circumstances where somebody is starting to fail and they're on a waiting list and there is no one stepping forward. Tell us about those paired exchanges.
So, you know, in the paired exchanges, you may have a donor who may not be a match for you for whatever reason. Typically, from an immunological point of view, maybe not the right blood type, or when you check your bloods together, even if it's of the same blood type, they're not compatible. And even though the donor may be willing to donate, they cannot donate to you because of this incompatibility. These paired donor exchanges, which is run through a number of different organizations, including UNOS, which is our main umbrella organization, and some other private institutions, which I won't go through right now, that run these exchanges that you can be registered in and essentially widen the net of potential donors that you can get.
So if you register as a donor, you're put in this pool.
Exactly.
And they find someone who you will match with.
Who you will match with. And then your donor who has been introduced to the pool will be then matched to someone who may be local. And in our case, we have at Upstate, we have done such a paired exchange where we matched local families. A husband and a wife who were incompatible. There was an altruistic donor who came forward, who was actually compatible with the wife, and then the husband, who was incompatible with the wife, gave to someone who was on our transplant list. So that facilitated two transplants, essentially, by someone coming
forward. So that type of concept has a lot of power in terms of shortening these lists and helping people.
And shortening the wait time, absolutely. Absolutely.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Timothy Hudson, who recently received a kidney transplant from his son, and Dr. Vaughn Whitaker, the surgeon who was involved in this operation. And we're talking about the challenges of waiting for and receiving a live kidney. So tell us briefly about the surgery that took place with Mr. Hudson.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say how rewarding it is to see an African-American son giving to an African-American father. It's not very often that we see young men of any race coming up to the plate to give. Usually daughters, or usually it's the other way around. Mothers and fathers are always willing to give to their children.
So this is a very inspirational story.
Yes.
And just like how Mr. Hudson was, I find a lot of recipients potentially, they refuse, just like you did, refuse to accept the gift from. I guess it's the parenting instinct.
Sure.
It was protective. Instinct, and I can't tell you the internal guilt that I felt, wondering if I was doing the right thing. And after doing my research and inspecting the life expectancy of my son and trusting in that research, I realized that my son should live a normal, healthy life. And in fact, he's doing quite well now.
Exactly.
He runs his own business and he's active. He works out. He looks really great. He was sore in the beginning for a few weeks, but he's doing fine. And I also wanted to add something to this. And my personal experience as an African-American male, there's a lot of myths in our community, and there still are, and I'm frustrated by it. And I've actually gone back to the dialysis center to speak to some of the other patients. In many cases, the first questions that are asked, okay, if I give up my kidney or if I get a kidney, what's going to happen to them? And that tells me immediately they have not done their research. And that, and in our communities, the first thing I hear is, okay, if I give a kidney to someone, what's going to happen with me? And it does not work in that way. You don't just, if you leave one kidney, they go together. It's not like, oh, if you needed a kidney, you're going to need a kidney. That's the bottom line. So if you donate a kidney, it's not going to change the life expectancy. It's not going to make a difference. So if you needed a kidney, you're going to need a kidney anyway.
What else would you like people in your community to know about this whole experience?
I'm reborn. I feel healthier every day. Today is a great day. I really, truly believe I would not be sitting here talking to you today, because I could feel death. And I can't explain it, but I could feel it, and I knew it. I kept quiet about it, but I would not be here. Now I'm here. I'm healthier. My son is healthy. I can plan for the future. It's beautiful not throwing up every day, being able to not have to go back on dialysis and a lot of pain. God, now it's just growing pains, and they're not so bad. It's I can see life again.
So do you also think that there's a need, or Dr. Whitaker, do you think that there's a need for more education within, well, in general in the population, but in the African-American community in particular, about some of the myths or debunking some of the myths about live donation and that kind of thing?
Yes. I mean, I've seen, I can think right now, and I see multiple recipients in my office who comes in who are African-Americans who say, there is no way I'm going to take a kidney from my son or my daughter. And part of that is based on this parental love and appreciation. But a lot of it is also based on, as Mr. Hudson says, myths. They think that it's primarily unsafe. This operation is very safe. It's the same risk as driving 18 miles in a motor car.
That's pretty amazing.
Risk. Yes. I mean, me coming into work each day is driving 18 miles. Do I think about it to do it? No, I don't. The other thing is donors are so highly screened that you have to be truly very healthy in order to be a donor. And as a result of that, if you're selected, you're essentially being, it tells you that you're qualified. You're going to do much better than members of the general population.
And the fact is that the history shows that people who do donate a kidney can go on and live full lives.
Oh, they do.
They do.
They live. Because they're a very highly selective group. They do actually live longer and more healthier than the rest of the population.
Just in closing, what have you told your son?
Thank you, to the point where he tells me, okay, enough's enough. He'll be coming to see me tomorrow. And he lives in Buffalo, so he also came from out of town to do this for me. So he'll be here tomorrow getting his, I believe it's 3 months ago, getting his checkup. basically, he's just routine for him, and he's ready to get back to work.
I can't thank you enough, both of you, for this inspiring story. It's incredibly valuable for people to hear, and I want to thank you for both what you do, Dr. Whitaker, and for all of this inspiration that you've shared with us today, Mr. Hudson. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Lynn.
My guests have been Timothy Hudson, who received a living donor kidney transplant from his son and his surgeon, Dr. Vaughn Whitaker. He's assistant professor of surgery specializing in hepatobiliary and pancreatic surgery and transplant services at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen. You're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.